We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us as we begin another week's worth of shows. It was once predicted that television would kill the movie business. Well, not only have movies survived, they thrive, or they seem to be thriving, at least in part, because of new technologies that have changed the way that movies are produced, distributed, and shown. This morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll talk a little bit about the present and the future of Hollywood, and our guest is Janet Wasko. She is professor and also Knight Chair in Communication Research at the University of Oregon. She's a scholar who's done quite a bit of writing on both television and film. She's the author or editor of a number of books, and just to mention three, Understanding Disney, The Manufacture of Fantasy, How Hollywood Works, and also a book called A Companion to Television. And then there are others. You can seek out some of her writing if you're interested. She's going to be here on the campus of the University of Illinois in just a couple of weeks. Actually, it's the end of next week, to give a talk in the MillerCom series. And the title of her talk is The Death of Hollywood, and you have to put a question mark on that, exaggeration or reality. This is something that's happening here on the U of I campus. She's hosted by the Department of Media and Cinema Studies and also the Institute of Communications Research. These MillerCom programs, they're always free and open to the public, so if you're interested, you can stop by. This will be Friday, February 12th, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Her talk is at the Knight Auditorium in the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory in Urbana on the U of I campus. So again, as I say, certainly anybody who is interested in stopping by and hearing what she has to say should feel welcome. And here on this program, questions, comments are welcome too. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, you're outside of the immediate area, use that. That's 800-222-9455. And now we're taking questions by email, so you can do it that way, and that is will-talk@illinois.edu. It'll help us if you can try to keep it brief. In any case, it helps us if you can keep it brief. That way, we get in as many people as possible. But certainly, folks who are listening are welcome to call. And Professor Wasko, hello.
Hi there.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Be there or wherever I am.
Or wherever you are. Yeah, believe me, I feel that way often myself. I guess that maybe the place to start is by taking some note of the fact that I think in Hollywood, maybe the fact is in Hollywood, people have always been worried. They're worried about, are they have enough people in the seats? Are they selling enough tickets? What's happening with the industry? And certainly nowadays, they have reason to worry. They have reason to worry about things like file sharing of video, and they have reason to worry about things like piracy. So it's not as if they don't have challenges. But having said that, it seems that every time some new technology comes along, people in Hollywood say, well, or people who watch the industry say, well, that's the end. And it seems to me, at least recently now, when I go to the movies, there are plenty of people there willing to spend whatever it costs to watch the movie. So that brings you around to the question, well, the death of Hollywood, really?
Right. Exactly. I think you've summarized the points I'm going to be making in this presentation pretty well. Specifically, I guess, this kind of gloom and doom especially started with television, but since then, there's been every few years something come along that usually technology, new technology come along that prompts everyone to scream and yell and claim that film is dead, Hollywood is dead, because these new technologies are going to take its place. And it doesn't seem to happen, actually, or they adjust to be able to survive, and not just by ignoring that technology, but kind of often embracing it. And Hollywood has become not just a place that thrives on movies and theaters, but movies that are seen in a lot of different formats, at a lot of different places, and using a lot of different distribution outlets. So eventually they've been able to survive quite well. And what's interesting about this point in time, maybe over the past year, there has been quite a bit of discussion within the industry, and then people observing the industry saying, oh my gosh, Hollywood's dead because of all of these different things a few of them that you mentioned. But then we come to this year and reports that last year Hollywood made more money at the box office than ever before. So they've had to kind of qualify that death of Hollywood argument a bit, but there are still a lot of concerns, and there's still, I would say, anyone looking at the industry would say that there's a lot of change going on, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But certainly to say that Hollywood's dying, it's a little too soon. There's a lot of adjustments that are going to be made, and I'm not predicting certainly that it's going to survive, but it certainly is going to change. That is easy to see.
Just one point, because you mentioned the fact that last year Hollywood made more money than ever before, and I think that some people would say one thing that you have to consider when you look at the take at the box office is that over time the cost of the tickets have gone up. And particularly if you look at something like the great success of Avatar, and the fact that now James Cameron has the distinction of making the two top grossing movies of all time. One of the reasons that Avatar made so much money is that it's asking for people who want to see it in 3D, you pay a premium. So how do you separate out increasing cost of tickets when you ask this question, well, is Hollywood making money?
Right. It's a tricky question because, first of all, you're right, you have to make sure that you consider that we have to adjust all of these claims for the price of tickets and also for inflation and all kinds of things. Actually, Avatar, if we adjust for all of this, really isn't the top box office film. Mm. If you adjust, apparently Gone with the Wind has that distinction. But certainly it brought in a lot of money. I think it's over $2 billion at the moment worldwide. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right in having to acknowledge that 3D was a big part of that, and the extra money that people did spend for 3D. There was something I read the other day that said that 70% of the revenue, the gross revenue from box office, was because of 3D. I'm not sure how they calculate that, but certainly it did make a difference. But the other point is, first of all, Hollywood, if we want to say, who is Hollywood, who's making money? Is it the producer? Is it the distributor? Is it the theaters? Well, it's usually the distributor, first of all, that's making money, and they're doing quite well, but not just with theatrical box office. Often that's the focal point, but, we're watching films in a lot of other different outlets, and it's distributed. They're distributed, as everyone knows, in DVD, on television, in various forms, and now online. So there's a lot of other revenue that comes in for that particular film. And for the most part, we can say that distributors, the big companies that distribute films, are the ones that usually, quite often, do quite well. It depends on the deal. And also it depends on, a lot of other kind of situations. But we look at those companies, and they're still, even though there's a lot of moaning and groaning, they're still doing fairly well. And also, acknowledge that they don't only depend on film, but they're usually pretty diversified and can depend on other areas, other parts of their business if film in one year is problematic. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, that you noted is that people are still going to the theater. There may be fewer people going, but certainly the theater experience hasn't completely disappeared. So that, you know, that's something also to take into account.
Mm-hmm. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Janet Wasko from the School of Journalism and Communication at University of Oregon. Our guest here is going to be here on the campus of the University of Illinois talking about the movie business and the question about Hollywood, its present and future. This is Talk in the MillerCom series. Be coming up on Friday of next week, so we're talking about the 12th, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And these events are always open to the public. Anybody who is interested should feel welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Just for the record here, somebody's listening and they're taking exception to the way that I am pronouncing the state where you're located.
Right.
They say, today's guest is from the University of Oregon, not Oregon.
That's right.
Okay, so, all right. So however you pronounce it, that's where it is. And questions are certainly welcome. Something that I think that we've sort of touched on, it seems that that time and again, when a new technology has come along, that the first impulse of Hollywood, and maybe this is of the entertainment industry as a whole, is to fight it. And then eventually to try to figure out how to turn that into a revenue stream. And they've actually managed to, I think, to do that with video tapes and VCRs and then DVDs. And now, although they're still trying to figure out how they're going to do it, I think that everybody pretty much knows that in the future, more and more people will be getting more and more of their media either by downloading it or streaming it. And so now people who produce television, produce and distribute television programs and produce and distribute movies are trying to figure out how to make money doing it. Because we've seen, there's a lot of illegal file sharing going on with music, and people are doing the same thing with video. And so that is indeed a challenge for the industry. How do they figure out how to get that under control and make money with that?
Right. I think where you started out by saying there's always a new technology that comes along and Hollywood seems to fight it is to some extent true, but if we look more carefully, it seems like we can start with television. And it's kind of a myth that Hollywood fought television. Maybe they were a little concerned, but they were in there trying to be involved in television from the very beginning. And it didn't take them very long to adjust. Certainly the theaters took a hit from television, that's for sure. But by the time that television really took off, there was a separation of distribution and exhibition. So the distributors didn't have to worry that much, but they certainly did get into television, selling their films to television and also getting involved in the television industry. So it's somewhat of a myth that, you know, Hollywood fights every technology or resists it. They have been possibly more reluctant to just jump in feet first. Certainly in this case, the case today where we've got online distribution and other kinds of distribution, they have hesitated, for several reasons, but certainly you named one of them, the music industry. What happened to them, Hollywood has been looking at that and trying to figure out how to avoid what happened with the music industry. But also fearful of piracy. They've also been reluctant to just jump in feet first, but they're being pulled because other companies, and this is an interesting development as well, companies outside of Hollywood are jumping in feet first. For instance, iTunes now represents a way to distribute film, as well as Amazon and other companies outside of Hollywood. So I think you can say that Hollywood's reluctant to immediately get into new technological forms. They're very careful about all of that, but it doesn't take them usually that long, as you say, to take advantage of those technologies.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly it seems that Apple has shown that it's possible to make money selling legal downloads of music.
Right.
Although people do complain about the flexibility or lack of flexibility in how they use the product once they've got it. But mm-hmm. Apple says, see, we show you can make money doing this. And I'm sure that they're already in doing that. They're selling movies, they're selling television programs, or they're selling you the opportunity to watch them. Same kind of problems maybe apply once you get the product and how you use it. But certainly that seems to me that's a model that you can look at that says, yeah, it's actually possible to do this and make money at it.
Right. I guess one of the things you might say is that certainly the distributors who very often, when you say Hollywood, you're talking about those big major companies that mainly are, in terms of film, distributing film. Sometimes they produce them, but where they make their money is distributing them. They're the ones that I think have been hesitant to get involved with online. They want control, first of all. The control of their product is what's important to them, but also they tend to really want to make a lot of money. And I think one can look at the amount of money that's made by these companies and say that, you know, gee, maybe they don't need to make that much money to survive, but there's a sense that you need to make a lot of money. So it'll be interesting to see how this evolves. And also, again, one needs to take into account all the other outlets where they also are able to make money from films. It'll be interesting to see what the mix of different markets as they develop and how much the distributors are going to be depending on these various markets. Like, an important question is when they release a film, where. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, they're having to release films in theaters earlier than they used to, for instance, globally because of the piracy issue. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops, and there certainly are a lot of questions still about how they're going to develop their system of distributing online.
Because of the piracy issue, are there people in Hollywood or in the movie industry who say the way that we used to do things with all these delayed releases, that first the movie would appear in the theaters in the United States and then maybe it would appear internationally and then a little while later it would appear in a format that you could rent? And there was always – there was this really staggered release, and now that
right.
we have online, we have another – avenue of distribution. Are there people who say, you know, look, maybe it would just make sense if we released it everywhere in every format, all the same, all on the same day?
I'm not sure if people are actually talking about that possibility. To a great extent, the distributors and the industry itself is kind of set in its ways a lot of times, although you certainly have seen adjustments, as you've noted. I'm not sure if that's an option that's being discussed. It certainly may be, but I haven't seen as much discussion of that, trying to follow what's going on. They are looking at some really interesting developments in terms of digital release, though. There's something that they have been just recently talking about, and pretty soon we may see a way of distributing films, at least digitally, where you buy the film in some form and you can play it on any kind of device, like a television, computer, phone, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Buy Once, Play Anywhere. And so that's kind of interesting. It won't be the kind of different distribution for computers, for television, so forth. You buy it once, and then you can play it on anything. It's stored you don't store it on your machine, it's stored somewhere else. So I think there's a couple of different versions of that, and it may indeed come out rather soon, that kind of device.
Yeah. This is interesting, and I think that there's a big and interesting question here about how people will respond to an idea like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that, in the past, people seem to feel strongly if they bought music or if they bought a movie, they seem to respond strongly to the idea that they had ownership, that is, that they had a physical device they could hold in their hands.
Right.
And, you know, at DVDs, for example, they make a lot of money. And as I understand, in some cases, almost half of what a movie makes come from DVD sales. Well, it's one thing if you can sell somebody a DVD and they can have it and they could have it on their shelf and they can know that theoretically any player they put it in should be able to play. But this idea that you're buying something and you have that kind of flexibility and yet you can't hold it. It doesn't exist as your personal property in that sense.
Right.
And there seems to be some question about, well, how are people going to take to that? Now, apparently, as far as music is concerned, people have taken to it just fine. They buy MP3s and they have them on their computers and their iPods or whatever, and that does exist in some physical form, and yet it's not like you can walk over to a shelf of CDs or vinyl and, you know, stroke it. It doesn't exist like that. So even if you could give people more flexibility of use, and that apparently is something people really complain about, still, how do people take to the idea that they have it and yet they don't?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point, and I'm sure that the folks who are developing this technology are interested as well in how audiences are going to respond to that. I'm thinking, though, you're talking about a physical product. Boy, before home video, we didn't have anything. You know, we went to see a film, and mm-hmm. we didn't possess it or could hold it in a physical form, and that worked. But now our audiences are people really wanting that. Now that they've had the experience of video or something that you can hold in your hand, as you say, I wonder how they're going to react to, as you say, owning something that they really can't touch, hold, or and so forth. I'm not sure. I think maybe a generation that grew up with all of this digital technology, it might not be a problem with them, and they certainly are the ones that often Hollywood aims its films at. So it's an interesting question, and I don't have the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it is true that we're moving to this time that more and more people are going to have the internet plugged into their television. Or
right.
maybe they'll have it plugged into a computer, and that will be plugged into the television.
Right.
Like people will be recording programs on their hard drives, and then they will be wanting to play them back on their computers, their netbooks, their iPads, mm-hmm. their iPods, their telephones. You name it. And do you think that the industry is going to manage to work out some sort of a way so that people can have that complete freedom that they want to play things on whatever kind of device they want? And I suppose at the same time, they also want to control unauthorized sharing of material.
Right. That's certainly an issue that is a real thorny one in terms of controlling everything. Apparently... that's what's in the future here, is this possibility of buying it once and then playing it wherever you want, even on phones, if people actually are watching feature films on phones, which apparently some people do. I think that's what this is headed for, the question of whether or not the industry can still keep control of their products, and the question of piracy is a real issue, and it's kind of driving a lot of, I think, the decisions being made about how to integrate these new forms of distribution. That's, I think, the primary thing that is really preventing Hollywood from just jumping into some of these new forms of distribution.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Janet Wasko. She's professor and also Knight Chair in Communication Research in the School of Journalism and Communication at the University of Oregon. And she is going to be on the campus of the University of Illinois next week, next Friday, the 12th, to give a talk on this subject. The title is The Death of Hollywood, Exaggeration or Reality? This is an event in the MillerCom series. She is being hosted by the Department of Media and Cinema Studies, as well as the Institute of Communications Research. These programs, these MillerComs, they're always free and open to anybody who would like to attend. So if you're interested in hearing more from her, you can stop by the Knight Auditorium. That's in the Spurlock Museum on South Gregory in Urbana on the campus next Friday, the 12th, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You can also go looking for her book. She is the author or editor of a number of books about the movie business and also some about television. Questions here are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a few callers here, and we'll start with the first in line. That's someone in Urbana. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that when this subject is usually brought up, it's spoken of usually in the delivery mechanism, in a theater, DVD, over the internet or whatever. But usually, no one's. And you were talking about the death of Hollywood. I think that's the title of your book. Question mark. What about content? Hollywood and the film industry are the only people that can really create these objects. I mean, these films, Avatar, whatever, all the classical films that have been made, and they're the only people that are going to make them in the future. Because if you go online and you go on YouTube or something, you see I don't know how to describe it, the less than professional films people try to make, you know, such as independent film companies and stuff like that, small independent organizations. So the content, if you look at this stuff, if you want to spend your time, you realize that, you know, it's not juvenile, it's the wrong word. It's not very well done, put it that way. It's sort of like home photography, the Kodak moment. So I think Hollywood will exist. It'll have to, because you're not going to have this kind of sophisticated entertainment like Avatar. To buy the software alone would cost you millions, or to have the talent to make it. Hollywood draws talented people. But would you comment on that? Thank you.
Sure. I think you brought up a good point, and certainly that's one that many people feel pretty strongly about, is that only Hollywood can make those really spectacular big films. But I think that there's there's certainly something to be said about a film that doesn't cost $200 million or, mm-hmm. as some people are saying, $300 million for Avatar, as being a film that people would want to watch. In fact, a lot of, you mentioned the word classic films, a lot of classic films certainly weren't blockbusters. In fact, we certainly have definitional problems in terms of what are the classic films, but they aren't always those that require a huge budget or a lot of special effects. Some people in Hollywood certainly are worried at the moment about a lot of these developments preventing, essentially independent film, but smaller films, strong films, Hollywood films still. They are increasingly becoming more problematic to make. I think this has always been a challenge, or at least for the last few decades, the question of how to make really strong films without having the huge amount of the huge budgets that accompany some Hollywood films.
Yeah, well, like in Sundance, I look at a lot of these
right.
channels and stuff. And I understand what you're saying. I mean, really not going toward the avatars of the world. They're usually, mm-hmm. they're very few and far between. And the general idea of making films, I usually, because while I do a lot of commercial art and I've written stuff before and it's copyright, I can't own a whole lot of copyrights. And the thing about ownership of property is another thing that the internet is basically disassembling or destroying or whatever. But where will these talented people, if you're not going to make any money on this stuff, you're not going to do it. I mean, you can only... the starving artist bit just only lasts so long.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow there needs to be some way to some form to pay these people, because you're right that in independent films, there are a lot of people who get a digital camera and make really interesting, sophisticated films because of the writing and the script or whatever, or not so much the image itself, but the actual tale, the story, like a Shakespeare play or something. But it's interesting that there needs to be a resolution to copyright and the ownership, because you're not, people are going to stop doing things if they don't get paid for it. I mean, unless you have a benefactor, something like you had an artist in the Renaissance, you had a benefactor. But that's just not going to work in the modern world. But thank you very much. I appreciate what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I guess I just to finish up, I take the caller's point, and you said obviously everybody can't make Avatar. You know, you need a lot of money to make a big blockbuster like that. But at the same time, I think you have to acknowledge that, particularly within the last, I don't know, couple of decades, the tools to make movies have become so affordable that it actually is possible on a relatively small budget to make something that looks good enough to show. And certainly there have been examples of movies that were made for a relatively small budget that end up making a lot of money. And that's why places like Sundance have become so big, is that then major distributors are looking for something that they can pick up for a relatively small amount of money and then go on and distribute and make a whole lot of money on. And there are plenty of examples of films that have worked just like that.
There certainly are examples, but if you look at those that have been picked up by Hollywood companies, I think the most recent one was Paranormal. I'm forgetting the name of the film, but
it was one of those things that was sort of a descendant of the Blair Witch project.
Yeah. You know, we'll come across those every couple years, maybe. But what about a lot of other films that really don't interest Hollywood in terms of distribution? And I'm sorry to focus so much on distribution, but it seems to be—I mean, that's how people's films get out there to be seen. And what about the films that don't get picked up by Hollywood companies that may be very good but may not have the potential of making a lot of money? What about the films that don't get made because they don't have the potential to make a lot of money? I think the emphasis on making a lot of money for a Hollywood film is one of the issues here, and even people in the industry kind of bemoan that, and fear, of course, they're always fearing this, that there won't be the possibility or the room for those kind of interesting films that aren't huge.
Yeah.
Well,
then I suppose people will make the argument that, again, though, the answer to that is the Internet, because it does make it possible for someone. You can make a movie, and if the reason that you're making it is just for the love of making it, and you would like some people to see it, it is possible to give it away.
Right.
Or the other thing that you can do is you can give it away, and then afterwards you can say to people who've watched it, you know, it did cost us something to make this, and if you like this, you know, would you be willing to give us $2, $5, $10, something for having watched it? So I suppose it all depends on what it is you're looking for and how much you think that you have to make.
Right. And certainly some in the independent world, like the truly independent independents, not those that are kind of dependent on Hollywood. I mean, certainly there's a lot of opportunity these days to distribute online in various ways, and that's happening. And certainly, online distribution in that sense is really helping independents. But it's I guess it's a question of kind of whether or not people, when they think of film, whether or not they think of the wide range of films that are out there, or they think of Hollywood. They think of what's going on in Hollywood as film. So certainly there's a lot of hope that the Internet and other kinds of, and specifically you mentioned the production equipment, or it's possible to make films in for less because of the various technologies there's a lot of hope that there can be more films made by more people that might be able to get out there and interest folks.
Yeah. We have another caller here in St. Charles, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Well, part of the reason why these, you know, the guy was wondering, you know, before me about all this cost, you know, the thing is the actors and actresses seem to get, every time there's a movie, they get, it gets more expensive per actor. And I noticed this, and they were talking about this, I don't know if it was you or somebody else here a while back, how all these TV programs are basically reality shows now, because they say it's far cheaper to run those than it is to do a sitcom. And, you know, all they could say is if it goes on the Internet, then they ought to be taxing the Internet. Because I hear this about papers, you know, Tribune, Sun-Times and all that. A lot of people are all upset because you're losing quality journalists, but not really. All you're doing is going from newsprint down to computers. You might be losing the guys that are doing the printing. That's the problem. I mean, we got to learn how to, I guess, go with the flow with this. It's just amazing. I mean, I saw Avatar, and it's just amazing. But, to cost that much money to make a film, it's just ludicrous. I've seen some stuff at Sundance Film Festival. It was just as great, if not greater, than Avatar. It goes to the little guy. I mean, who's sticking up for the little guy? It costs, you know, how can you compete with somebody that makes millions of dollars like this, you know, like an Avatar? And I got to say, I usually tend to stick with the little guy. I've seen some films in the last couple of years that have been made by, you know, off-brand filmmakers that I thought were pretty excellent. I was wondering what your comment would be.
Yeah, I think that it's a really good and important point to look at the cost of these big films and see, you know, why are the budgets so high? And the actors and actresses, you're right, are part of the reason that budgets are so high for a lot of Hollywood films. And why do companies pay that much to actors and actresses? Well, the whole notion of stars and celebrities and people who have a name that will draw people to the box office. Well, Hollywood's kind of wrapped up with that, and it's hard to break out of that. A lot of people in Hollywood bemoan these very, very high salaries for some of the actors and actresses. But that's not the only expense. I suppose Avatar's budget was partially because, well, I shouldn't say because I'm not too sure, but certainly the special effects took a lot of the costs. And one wonders, actually, how that is working, whether or not it could have been made for less. A lot of, if you look at budgets for Hollywood films, some of it is padded in certain ways, and there's a sense of excess. And we look at other films, as you say, that are smaller films. They're as interesting. They don't necessarily have to have huge, big, known stars. They don't have to have huge special effects. And so it's certainly possible to make films that are very interesting for a lot less. I'm not sure your question. There was another part to it.
I think, though, I want to thank the caller and go on to somebody else here, but I do think it is a fair point, and people have complained for a long time that the big Hollywood studios have never been completely honest either about how much movies made or how much they cost. So you might well ask, you might well say, well, we're not exactly sure on either of those things.
Right. There's a notion of, there's a term, creative accounting, and in Hollywood, and there's well-known court cases where people within the industry file suits against the distribution companies because they just don't know where all the money went. And it's very difficult to find really good information about that. And if you look at the way the distribution system works, it's amazing. what happens in terms of who gets what and what money is spent for. It's very difficult to find out that information to begin with. Yeah. Right.
About 10 minutes left in this hour of Focus 580 with Janet Wasko from the School of Journalism and Communication, University of Oregon. She's going to be here on the campus next week to talk about the Hollywood, its present and future. Questions are welcome here this morning, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Another caller here in Spring Bay, line one. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you're right to focus on the distribution. I went to see Avatar a couple of weeks ago at our local multiplex, and, of course, I wanted to see it in 3D, and it cost me $7 for, what was it, maybe 2.5 hour entertainment I consumed. And I walked out of that theater afterwards thinking to myself, you know, I just sat in a probably $20, $25 million building with, they paid the heat, they paid the taxes, they maintained the screens and all of the equipment to show it. And I got to consume, and I had heard that it was a $400 million budget for Avatar. I got to consume that for $7. I thought that was a pretty good deal. But I also got to thinking, I sure as heck wouldn't want to be making back my investment on that building, selling tickets at $7 or $8 or $9 a click. So I think there's a real disparity there. Part of the reason that Avatar was so expensive, what I've read, is that he developed a lot of new technology, and that was a lot of the cost on it. And then one last thing I guess I'd say is part of the going to the movie experience has been dulled for me by sitting and watching commercials before the film begins, and I understand that they have to do that, I guess, to cover their costs. But when I buy a movie ticket, I want to see the movie, and I don't want to be pitched on certain things. I thought the irony, too, with Avatar was I sat there and I watched a commercial for joining the military and then watched a movie on the military corporate complex. Enjoying your conversation. I'll get off and listen. Thanks.
Thank you. I think the caller makes some excellent points, and I guess I wonder, particularly because I think that kind of thing is getting worse and worse. Will some point come when audiences are just going to say, look, I've had it with that. I can sit and watch this at home. Maybe I got a nice big TV and surround sound. What do I need the nuisance of that and everything involved in going out to watch the movie when I could watch it very comfortably right here?
Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about the death of theaters.
Oh, yes.
Movie theaters. And that's been around for a while, too. Again, television, video, there were all similar kinds of arguments made. But the theater business is a tough one, really, even though one would look at box office and look at that $7 that comes in, or I mean, it's a lot more in a lot of other markets, of course, but and see, wow, why do they need to show advertising before the film? Aren't they making enough money for my ticket? Well, if you look at the deals, again, between distributors and theaters, it's kind of amazing that theaters can stay in business. Very often distributors demand 90% of what comes in at the box office. Very typically, these kind of 90-10 deals mean that theaters really have, they don't make all of their money. In fact, they make very little from tickets, but it's from concessions. That's why popcorn is so high.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly, of course, as you've observed, they've added advertising. Those are, that's money that they don't have to give to the distributor. And it's another reason why there's a lot of other things going on at theaters these days. Now, increasingly, as they're becoming digital, it's possible for them to feature other kinds of events, concerts, and things like that. Would also mean that they don't have to give that money back to the distributors, because the distributors are the ones that call the deals and The theaters have to put up with some really pretty dire situations in terms of getting films.
Yeah. We're coming down to about our last 5 minutes, and you know there is something that it raised in my mind, something I wanted to ask about, and that is some people, we have been talking here about death of Hollywood or death of movies or death of theaters. Well, I think that there one something that particularly seemed to be roiling the world of film not all that long ago was concerns about the death of film. That is this big reel of stuff that you feed through the projector. And that as a method of showing the movie, there was some concern that what theaters were actually doing was they were going to go to digital projection, and that instead of shipping the theater all these big cans of film, that they'd put a big satellite dish up, and that's the way that the movies would get to the theater, and then the movies would project them, and it would kind of be like watching a great big television. And there were people who were really concerned about the fact that that was... the quality of the image was different, the experience would end up being different, and that if we lost film, that would be a big loss. Where does all that stand now?
We're losing film, for sure.
So it's actually, it's happening.
It's happening.
That way.
It's happening, one might say it's happening relatively slowly. There was first the problem of quality and different systems, being offered, and now much of that is settled, and now it's a question of converting theaters, and it's a big expense for some theaters, something like, of course, per screen, something like $150,000 per screen to convert, and they finally made some deals with distributors to help them, some of the theaters, convert, but it's relatively slow because of the economy, for instance, the problem of investing more money in a theater is an issue, and there are other issues in terms of piracy and kind of the control over that the digital process versus the regular film process. But it's happening. Many of the theaters where you saw Avatar in 3D are digital now. I am having a hard time finding out how many theaters have gone digital, but it's growing, and it's not necessarily a problem now in terms of quality, at least from the Hollywood perspective.
And have you had this experience of seeing enough of the two so that you would say, is there for digital kind of projection as opposed to a traditional showing a film?
Yeah, quite honestly, I haven't personally.
So I'm just wondering, well, what exactly is the difference? And for most people, would that be noticeable? Would they care at all?
Yeah. I'm not sure. However, I think that there was a good deal of concern about the quality issue, and it took them a few years to arrive at a standard. But it's... I haven't seen as much discussion of that. And quite honestly, I haven't personally experienced the two to compare them.
Yeah. Well, we're coming down to the point where we have a couple of minutes left, and we've touched on some of the big issues. I'm sure some of these things are the things that you're going to be talking about. And a lot of this has to do with the move into the digital age. And I've looked at one of your books. It's called Hollywood in the Information Age, and probably if you were writing that book today, you probably would call it Hollywood in the Digital Age, or something.
Exactly.
Something,
yes.
Like that. although I think a lot of the issues are still the same. Maybe the only difference would be some of the things in the book that you talk about, things that are coming. Well, they're here now.
Mm-hmm. The major point I was trying to make in that book, Hollywood in the Information Age, is certainly some things change because of technology and other developments in Hollywood certainly change, but there's a lot of continuity. Mm-hmm. Continuity meaning that Hollywood still treats film as a commodity. It's still a commercial process, and there's profit involved. And I think that remains, and it influences whatever kinds of technological developments may come along.
Yeah, so you'd have to ask, in spite of all the big changes, and digital has been the driving engine, so changes in the way that movies are made and edited and distributed and viewed, all of those sorts of things, is there, though, at some level where things don't change, and maybe it is at the level that says, we expect to be making a whole lot of money, and if we don't think we're making a whole lot of money, then we're going to think something's wrong here.
That's right, exactly. And I think one of the things that, we go to movies, enjoy movies, but especially when we start looking at and analyzing movies, I think sometimes, at least some scholars that look at films, they kind of overlook that issue. They overlook that characteristic of film and just talk about film as art.
Yeah. Because it still seems, we started out talking about the fact that people still go to the movies, and it seems to me that that it's still a pretty cheap date, and we still we want to be entertained, and perhaps when things are bad, we really want to be entertained then. Anything that's going to take our minds off of our problems for an hour and a half or however long it is, then maybe we'll say, okay, you want $7 for that? Well, I there's not much else I can do with my $7, so I'll part with that so you can take me out of my daily experience for a little while. And I suppose that's why people have always gone to the movies.
Right. The other very, very high box office for the industry was during World War II. So, and also during the Depression.
During the Depression.
For a while, it was thought that Hollywood was depression-proof because the box office remained relatively high.
Yeah.
So you have something there.
Well, there we're going to have to stop. For people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to hear more from our guest, Janet Wasko, she's professor and night chair in communication research at University of Oregon. And she will be here on the campus next week, next Friday on the 12th. She is giving a talk, The Death of Hollywood, Exaggeration or Reality. This is a MillerCom event. It's free and open to the public. This will be Friday, February 12th. 4 in the afternoon, Night Auditorium. That's in the Spurlock Museum on the campus on South Gregory in Urbana. She's hosted by Media and Cinema Studies and also Communications Research. Thanks very much.
Thank you.